everyone, welcome to At This Performance Podcast. I'm your host, Jennifer Lynn. Join me for conversations with people in the theater world. You never know who's going to show up or what we'll talk about. So silence your cell phones. The show is about to begin. So my guest today is creator of film, television, music, and theater. He'll be premiering his new musical, Beethoven Live in Concert, at Green Room 42 on May 15th. Please welcome Jad Jacob. Hi, Jad.
Hello, hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming. So this is an interesting topic. Out of all the composers that there are, why Beethoven?
It's a great question. I mean, Beethoven's story, I think, is so unique to him. And there were a lot of things that pulled me about his story in particular. But, you know, he has such a fascinating personal life that a lot of the other composers don't. A lot of them, of course, have plenty of chaos in their lives, but Beethoven's was tied into his work in a way that I found really interesting. And kind of the first question that hooked me on his story was, how does this depressed, deaf, socially absent human being compose the Ode to Joy, which is the most glorious, like, celebration of humanity and brotherhood and love? And not only could he really not hear a lot of it, but he was somebody who had a lot of problems in his family life, in his love life, in his social life. And so seeing that kind of almost complete split in who he was really fascinated me.
That's cool. Good. Cause I was like, wow, there's like all these composers. And I'm like, okay. And looking at the website for the musical, it says, before Freddie, Elton, and Jimmy, there was Ludwig. Are Freddie, Elton, Jimmy big musical influences of yours?
Absolutely, yeah. I grew up on classical music and I grew up on rock. And that's kind of a lot of where this show came from is, you know, growing up, I took the typical piano lessons of Bach and Beethoven and all that fun stuff. But I also grew up with those people and, you know, watching Queen music videos or even like Shania Twain, Evanescence, like these like loud kind of sounds. And having both of those as influences, I never really saw them as particularly different. Like, even though they were far apart in time, they felt very similar, especially Beethoven. And, you know, Beethoven on the piano, especially, so physically dynamic. And so, like, that's a lot of what made him unique compared to the other composers, was his music was so like sudden in just the dynamics of it, which is something that happens in rock a lot as well. So yeah, I mean, those are big influences on me, but also on the show in general. A lot of the music is kind of set in the world of the 1970s, where Beethoven comes in and kind of establishes this sound of 70s rock, you know, and it goes further, it goes into the 80s, 90s, back to the 60s, all that stuff. But I looked a lot at 70s rock and roll for inspiration for how Beethoven sounded.
I mean, great era to go by. It had so much amazing music.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. And tell me about this amazing cast that you have at the Green Room on May 15th.
Absolutely. I'm going to be playing Beethoven. For our other characters, we have Lexi Lawson from Hamilton, coming in to play Josephine, who's kind of one of Beethoven's students, and then becomes a love interest. Really interesting character. We have Michael Lee Brown, who was in Dear Evan Hansen, coming in to play Casper, who is Beethoven's brother. He's kind of this really fun, sleazy character who kind of becomes Beethoven's agent and then screws him over and all this fun stuff. So he's great. We have Gabriella Pizzolo and Oscar Williams from Fun Home coming in. Gabby is going to be playing Mozart, who's going to kind of, I don't want to reveal too much, but Mozart is kind of a bit of a Greek chorus character who like narrates a lot of, as the show goes on, kind of popping in to drop in their thoughts on what's happening. And Oscar is playing Carl, who's Beethoven's nephew, which, again, don't want to reveal too much, but there's a really interesting story there. And we have Cara Rose DiPietro coming in to play Julietta, another one of, this is Josephine's cousin and Beethoven's love interest. A lot of love interest in this show. And they don't go too great for the guy, but whatever. We have RJ Christian, who is a friend of mine who wrote some music for the Ratatouille musical, from a few years ago, who's coming in to play Handel, who Handel and Mozart are going to kind of like go at it and narrate the show as we go throughout. And one final cast member who will be revealed in due time.
Okay, awesome. I can't wait. That sounds like an amazing cast.
Yeah, I'm super excited. I'm very, very lucky to be working with these people, and I cannot wait to hear it all.
That's like how I feel when people come on this podcast. Like, wow. So there are 29 songs in the show, correct?
Yes, at the moment, unless they make me cut more.
Okay. Are there any samples of Beethoven's music in what you've written? Have you taken, like...
Absolutely, yeah. So the concert in May is just... we're doing about 10 songs for the production, so it's not the full show. It's just kind of like a sample of what we have. But even in those songs, there are pieces of Beethoven's work. A lot of, again, what fascinated me about his story is how interconnected his personal life was to his music. So, for example, I'm sure we all know the Moonlight Sonata, blah, 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 all that stuff. That piece was actually written as a dedication to Kara's character, who I just mentioned, Giulietta, one of the love interests, where essentially he was, interested in her romantically, and then it didn't work out, but she kind of was like, oh, like, write a song for me. And then it was kind of this, almost like this breakup song where he, like, dedicated it to her after they weren't together anymore. And there's a surprising number of songs like that. Not just romance songs, but also, like, things that were happening politically in Europe at the time that tie into his music. And so there's pieces of the score where you will very much hear familiar tunes. And the great thing about Beethoven is there's so many familiar tunes. We have the fifth, but there's also the ninth, and there's also the seventh, which people don't even realize that they know, and there's For Elise, and there's the Moonlight Sonata, and there's a million like references that are sprinkled in there. So you'll definitely hear some Beethoven. Yeah.
So your first ever workshop for this was May of last year.
Yeah, there was we did a Zoom workshop during summer of 2020, but last May was the first in-person reading.
How much of the show has changed since the first workshop? All of it, right?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, I started writing this in 2018. And so throughout the years, there have been so many changes. One of the biggest ones from last year is I got some really helpful feedback last year. And the helpful part about the feedback was it was mostly the same two or three things said over and over again, which is how I was like, okay, like everybody's kind of having the same thoughts, which is great. And one of them was just this feeling that you're watching scenes play out. Like, it's just like, oh, Beethoven did this and then Beethoven did that. And it was very much just like, in 1805, this happened. In 1806, this happened, which is kind of a hole that a lot of these biographical shows can fall into, where you just feel like you're not connecting as much as you are just like watching the story happen. So one of the big changes was really picking apart the first, like just the first like 15, 20 pages of the show to get you into Beethoven's shoes as early as possible, get you to empathize with him. Because he is kind of a tough character. I mean, he's notoriously pretty cruel. So I wanted to start him in a more sympathetic place. And so that was one of the big changes, was like getting an audience to side with him at the beginning, which kind of leads you to be a lot more invested in everything that happens to him, as opposed to just watching.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely seen a lot of musicals where you're saying like, and this happened, and then this happened, and then you're like, there's no flow to it. I'm very weird when I go see shows. I'm like, should that have been there? And I have no clout to like do that.
but the interesting thing is, a lot of the times the audience knows things that even the composer doesn't realize, and has nothing to do with any sort of skill or experience or anything. I mean, anybody who goes to the theater or experiences entertainment or art in any form is going to watch something and just have a feeling. You know, you can know nothing about theater and watch something and think, well, I don't know why this scene was here and this was unnecessary, blah, blah, blah. And it's great to hear that from anybody. And that's what I'm excited about with this show, is it's very much on one end a show for like fans of theater and rock and classical music who can go in like knowing certain things and then being like excited at seeing them. But it's also a show where you can go in and know like absolutely nothing and like learn about Beethoven, but not in like a, as you said, like, and then in, 1815 when he composed the whatever.
Because it's kind of like when you read something over and over again, then you have somebody else proofread it and you're like, there should be another word here. Your eyes just don't see it.
Yeah, absolutely. And having been with the material for so long, there's certain things that I get attached to without realizing. And it takes somebody else to come in and be like, why is this line here? And I'll be like, oh, it's to establish that his dad did this, and that's why this scene is there. And then they'll be like, oh, where does it say that? And I'm like, oh, it doesn't. It's just been in my head for 3 years, and it doesn't actually exist. You know, like, you need somebody to tell you that.
Yeah. And are you concerned with being compared to other musicals that have taken similar liberties with other figures of history?
I wouldn't say concerned. I mean, it's definitely what comes up, you know, when I'll pitch the show to my friends and they'll be like, oh, so Hamilton. And I'm like, they end with the same letter. Yeah. No, I mean, I've of course taken so much inspiration from the way Lin created Hamilton, not just in the melding of contemporary with the past, but also in the way he recontextualized it to make it really general for everybody without being generic, right? It's a really specific story, but it applies to anybody that sees it. And that's something that I'm hopefully trying to do with this. But I don't mind the comparisons. I mean, I think if anything, this show fits a lot more in the realm of these 70s and 80s mega musicals of, like, you know, the big sets and the loud sound and the kind of, it's almost entirely music. There's very little, there's just book kind of transitioning in between. So it's very kind of operatic in that sense. But I think it's exciting to be in the same realm as shows that are bringing back not just old stories, but also, like, really new ways of telling those stories. I think, you know, I had seen Six a couple of months ago, and I was just so, like, excited by the idea that these characters in history who, as is the point of the show, were not necessarily the center of their own stories, could then leave such an impact emotionally on an audience. So I think it's an exciting thing. I mean, it's definitely a booming time of, like, recontextualized history.
Yeah. I got, when I was listening to the demos and watching the videos, I got a little bit of a Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson feel. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is one of my favorite shows. Great. I love that.
Yeah, I have heard that a couple of times. That show has been,
Yeah. And no, it's definitely not a bad thing, because especially if somebody likes a show that is no longer, we'll gravitate to another show.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's true.
This isn't your first show. You've written a lot of other shows. What other shows have you written?
So actually, this is my first full musical. I have written plays, and I mainly have written for film and television. So I had written a play, Beans and Rice, that premiered at New York Theater Festival last year. That was kind of like just a 3-act straight play about this oncologist who her husband has to go in for a cancer screening. And it's just kind of this really intimate family drama. But other than that, I've mostly been in the world of film and television, and then COVID hit, and then I was like, okay, well, I have my keyboard and I don't have a film crew, so maybe we should, you know, get working on this this show. But no, this is my first full musical. This is the first time I never really saw myself as one who would be composing theater. I came from acting. Like, I always was, like, acting in theater. It wasn't so much like, I don't really know how it came about. It wasn't like, oh, like, I'm going to write musicals, and then one of them was Beethoven. It was sort of just like, well, this is a really cool story, and it feels like a musical, so I guess that's the format. And then just kind of, like, figuring out the format based on shows that I had seen before.
Is there any show that you wish you wrote?
I mean, my favorite show is Sweeney Todd. And I would say I wish I wrote it, but I appreciate the experience of it more than I would have appreciated myself trying to figure all that shit out. So, but that's just an incredible show. There's some show that's on the tip of my tongue that I'm thinking about that I do wish I had written. But I tend to just be more excited by seeing amazing things. There are shows that I wish I was in or in some way a part of, maybe. With watching other people's shows, I love to see what isn't there, even in these big, all-consuming shows that are just so incredibly well-made. I love to look at them and be like, what if this character was actually the villain, or what if it was a different genre of score, and, like, really, like, intentionally screw with it and just see, like, you know, maybe usually it ends up horrible, right? Like, usually you change anything about one of these crazy shows and you'll see exactly why it had to be the way it was. But sometimes you find something. Sometimes you can see, you know, and that's why I think I love Sweeney Todd so much, is it kind of takes the traditional story of, like, here's this guy who meets this girl whose dad sucks, and then they try to run away and whatever. And then it says, what if they were not even the main characters? What if the main characters were, like, the evil barber who kills people down the street? And that flip of perspective is something that I do with Beethoven too, where, you know, I try to look at the other characters in his life and say, like, well, this person's only famous. We only remember their name because of how they were connected to Beethoven. But what if they had a song where they were the main character, you know, and seeing how that can play out.
Have you seen the most recent version of
Santa? I have, absolutely. I am hoping to see it again when I win the lottery, because I'm not buying a ticket. But when I win the lottery, I will be spending my $40 and over there.
You mentioned before you've written films. You've also did documentaries and web series. And which ones were your favorite to write, if there's a favorite?
I have a favorite, but it hasn't existed yet. It's a television pilot I wrote. I don't know. I kind of just have liked the ones where I get to do it with my friends and we're all just like hanging out and like making a movie or something. Like, those are the ones that I have like really fond memories of.
You also mentioned that you did a bit of acting. What was your favorite show that you've been in?
Oh, my peak in my life, because I'm never gonna do anything close to it ever again, is my senior year of high school. I played the Phantom in The Phantom of the Opera, and it was just the most incredible experience. It's such a fun cast, and like, we had the craziest set. It was just like a dream come true for me, because I had always loved that show and that character specifically, and I put so much of myself into the performance of it, everything else. And it was such a perfect like capstone of like, okay, this is like the last thing I'm doing in high school, and then I'm leaving. And that's what I did, and that's trying to chase that high ever since.
So that was my next question, that you played the title role in Phantom of the Opera in high school. And did you have a desire to play that role on Broadway?
I would have loved to. I always thought that I wasn't... In my mind, I was like, you know what I'd love to do? I'd love to just like sing the songs in like a cabaret setting, but I don't know that I could ever. I am not great at sticking with one. I mean, it sounds like I'm great at sticking with a project for a long time because of Beethoven. But what I mean is like consistently over and over again doing the exact same thing in like a Broadway sense is I probably like love it for a week. And after 3 months, I'd be like, oh my God, like I have to go be in Beetlejuice or something. Like, I have to leave. I mean, that would have been insane, and I would have loved it. But I just kind of would. I love singing those songs in any setting. I do a weekly dueling pianos show at the Green Fig in Midtown, which is by Green Room 42, where the show is happening. My partner and I are you know, we both like the music from Phantom, and sometimes we'll get requests from that show, and you know, she'll belt out the high E, and I'll switch the organ and all that fun stuff.
Yeah, so that show is every Saturday at 9 p.m.
Yeah, they actually just switched it to Fridays last week. So I think, so from now on, it's going to be Fridays at 9 p.m. And yeah, it's at the Green Fig, which is in the hotel.
So you just take requests for that show? And
Yeah, it's all requests. If you know piano bars, it's basically just two pianos and we have a drummer and we just take requests the whole night. It's, you know, it gets, sometimes it's a party. It's crazy. Everyone's dancing and jumping around. And we try to encourage more Broadway. But it's because it's a hotel, it's a lot of tourists. So we get the traditional Elton John, Billy Joel, you know, all that fun stuff, which is always so great to do.
I'd be like, throw a loop in there. I'd be like, play something from Bonnie and Clyde.
Well, that's the scary thing is we want theater, but then we're afraid, like, what if we get some crazy theater person that's going to request like the on-tract from like My Fair Lady with the original record, like just some really obscure stuff that we're gonna be like, let me like look up the tabs for this really quick.
Exactly.
Because they can be, we got and when it comes to Sondheim, oh my God, my one of my good friends came to visit a while ago, and she's a big theater person, and she had requested Giants in the Sky, and I was like, yeah, like I love this song, I know this song, like we're gonna slay, it's gonna be great. And so I didn't even look at it because I know it, and then we get there and I look at the tabs, which the way dueling pianos is because you're doing the requests on the fly, we just go by the chords and kind of make up the piano as we go. And the tabs were all completely wrong. Like, it was like weird. It was like 1-5-1-5-1. And I was like, Sondheim did not write 1-5-1-5 for Into the Woods. And so I'm singing the song in what I think is the correct key, but then like when I'm playing the piano, it does not match at all. And I'm like, okay, we're just going to do our own version of this song, I guess. So Sondheim is tricky because you really need sheet music for that, which is harder to just, you know, whip it out on the fly.
Yeah, I mean, like, you can't just have like this whole like big catalog behind you. Like, let me just get that book.
Yeah, and I wish, that'd be great.
They're gonna build you a whole wall, like it's big book. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
You also wrote a book of original poetry when you were 10.
Oh my gosh.
Correct?
Wow, you are whipping that out. Oh, wow. She did her research.
I did my research.
Okay.
I did my research. Did you intend to write a book at 10, or were you just kind of like writing, not knowing
I was just writing poet. Like, my mom is a poet, and I had always written generally, and then when I was like 9, it turned into like poems, and then I just started like writing a bunch of poems, and then I don't even know how it came about. I think my parents were like, oh, we should, because my mom was working on a book at that time, like self-publishing a book, and my parents were like, oh, like, I don't know, maybe they encouraged me to do it or something. Obviously, I had nothing to do with the publication of it. I didn't have an agent or anything.
You weren't calling publishers at 10.
No, I wasn't. But it was just me wanting to write poems, and then that turned into a collection, and then I think it just was like, let's self-publish this, I suppose. But I hope that I like some of the poems in there, but it's been a good decade. So I'm hoping that my lyricism has gotten a little bit more exciting since then.
It's available on Amazon.
It is. Oh, are you encouraging people to buy my 10-year-old poetry book? Woo!
I don't know. Maybe they're gonna
sign
all
copies
bring
at the stage door and
to the green room, and they're gonna be like, "Please sign my book."
Oh, I gotta read. Maybe I need to make a revised edition, because there might be some some stuff in there that I don't even know what it could be.
You also performed at Carnegie Hall for the Honors Performance Series. What was it like performing at that iconic venue?
Oh yeah, it was so cool. It was actually during Phantom. It was like a couple weeks before the show when I was in high school, and I dipped out for a week, and they have this wonderful series where all these high schoolers from, I want to say around the country, but it might have been around the world, come to New York, and you kind of stay in Midtown for the week and rehearse this wonderful music, and then you join the orchestra, and then you all perform at Carnegie. And it was such a, I mean, the venue is so cool, and it's also so like big and tall. Like, you look all the way up to the ceiling, and there's these tiny little booths up there, and you're like, how is this that big? And the sound of it was amazing, and it was a really amazing experience. And especially just the music, like being a theater, like doing theater now, it is still really exciting for me to get into like choral music, especially like traditional music of different cultures and different countries, and like learning new languages and stuff like that. I think it's something that is not as present in like American theater. It tends to be very like American theater, but choral music has kind of a more worldly sensibility, which I really appreciate, and it's great just kind of exploring like totally new genres of music, and then doing it at Carnegie Hall, which was crazy.
Yeah, I recently saw a show at Carnegie Hall this year, and just always like being there is just like, you look around and you're just kind of like, oh yeah, there's a show I'm gonna watch. Like, before the show starts, I was just kind of like looking around. I was walking up and down, and you don't realize, like, when you look at the building, you don't realize how big it is until you're actually inside of it.
I remember that too. It's gigantic, and the backstage and all that's crazy.
And before we get to our last question, I would just like to remind our listeners that if they like what they hear, they can support this podcast by going to buymeacoffee.com/@thispodcast.
Where can people go to find out more about you, more about the musical, and also where can they buy tickets?
Absolutely. So my website, jadjacob.com, has just like all of my whole life is on there. My birth certificate, it's all there.
This book of poetry.
Yeah. Oh God. It actually is on there, although I haven't linked it. So maybe I should do that in case all these avid fans are ready to read my magnum opus. But there's a show for the website, which is bvnthemusical.com, or on Instagram, TikTok, or bvnthemusical. But if you want to get tickets, you can go on the Green Room 42 website. We are on May 15th at 9:30. If you just scroll down in the cabarets, or you just Google it, Beethoven Live in Concert, you'll find it there. You can grab a ticket and bring your friends. It's going to be, it's a awesome venue. It's kind of a dinner and drinks plus incredible performers type of space, and we're going to have a amazing rock band there, so it's going to be like a full concert sound, which is super, super exciting.
Thank you so much for coming on. I'm excited about the musical. It sounds like a lot of fun.
Of course. Thank you for having me. Hopefully I'll see you there.
Yeah. Everybody, get your tickets to Beethoven Live in Concert at the Green Room 42 on May 15th.
See you there.